Well, for most South Africans, meat comes from Woolworths or Checkers or ShopRite or Pick and Pay or wherever they shop from, because the distance between what we consume and where it's produced is sometimes, too far to imagine. However, a big story has emerged in South Africa. Foot and mouth disease is expanding. The farmers are under siege in certain parts of the country. And Dr. Theo de Jager from SAAI or SAI is going to be giving us insights into what it means and why consumers need to be paying attention. Theo, I can see you out and about. As you told us off air, you're in Magaliesburg. Well, I guess that's part of your game, isn't it? You do occupy boardrooms as formerly the head of the World Farmers Association, and now with, do you call it SAI or SAAI?
SAI, yeah.
But it's SAI, so it's like you sow.
But, yeah.
But this time it's got nothing to do with sowing. It's got everything to do with the production of food of livestock. And foot and mouth is no laughing matter. Just explain to the townies why foot and mouth is such a big issue.
Foot and mouth. Thank you so much for inviting me, Alec. Foot and mouth disease is one of the most feared diseases by livestock owners in the world because it's so highly contagious. You know, it runs like wildfire. It is spread from the mouths and body fluids of animals. And it causes sores in the mouth and on the hooves of ruminants. It is a state-managed disease. So the moment that you suspect that there is foot and mouth around, you need to let the state know. And in South Africa, it is endemic. We've always had foot and mouth disease. Especially in the northernmost and northeastern parts of our country. Foot and mouth is endemic in the Kruger National Park. All the buffaloes in the Kruger Park would have it, but it does nothing to them. They don't get sick and they don't die from it. It is when they make contact with cattle that we have damage. Now, how that happens is usually because of elephants. Elephants are the only animals who can break that Armstrong fence around the Kruger Park. And in situations like we have lately, there are simply too many elephants in the park. And we're not allowed to hunt them or reduce those numbers. So they break out. And once they've broken the fence, the buffaloes walk out. It mostly happens in the Wembe district or Giani districts, where they drink water from the same troughs as the cattle. I was involved in that district agricultural union for many, many years. We've had a few outbreaks, but we managed it previously through zones. We have the red zone where we accept that we will always have foot and mouth disease. And then there's a buffer zone or a blue zone where we do not vaccinate the cattle so that we can pick it up once it has spilled over. And when that happened, we move the border or the boundary of the red zone to that of the blue zone, and we simply close that whole area. And then the rest of the country is called the white zone, which is supposed to be foot and mouth disease free. And we had a proper agreement with the international animal health authorities that this is our management plan, and it worked for us for many years. The first few times when it happened after I've started farming, closing off the area meant that we would put roadblocks on every dirt road and all the main roads to make sure that no one would move meat or cattle through that boundary of the Blue Zone. And we did it in our capacity as a member of the Farmers Association or as a member of the Commando. And with us at that roadblocks, we had the soldiers, the defense force. We had the police. We had the local traffic officials. And nothing moved through there. We managed the integrity of that line for decades. This is what we've lost since. We do not have roadblocks anymore. We don't have the capacity to cordon off a certain area. So we cannot control the movement of animals. And it will move. If you don't control it, it will move. Because it's the livelihood of both commercial farmers and smallholder farmers who depend on the income they get from selling those animals. And once it's an affected area, it's been declared an affected area, you're no longer allowed to take it to the auction floors or to the feedlots. And the latest outbreak has really spilled over much wider across the country than ever before, even into the Eastern Cape, into the Free State, in the last week or so, also into the Western Cape. And our farmers are in dire straits. I wish I could have bottled this experience and have spread it across the country to consumers to share with us this feeling when farmers would call you and say, at the end of this month, I need to pay my installment at the bank. I need to knock down my annual facility at the cooperative. I need to pay my children's university fees or they will not get their marks, their results. And now I can do nothing. I was supposed to sell this 300 or that 600 cattle, but I can do nothing with it now. And the banks don't really understand that, or the university would not really understand that. So if we do not build a kind of a bridge for them from the trouble in which they are now to some kind of temporary solution, farmers will most probably try to find a way just to get an income to survive. This is of existential importance to the farmers. They need to financially survive this foot and mouth outbreak.
Hermanus is a man from this windy little town called Yaku. Sorry, other way around. Yaku's from Hermanus. Yaku, we need to talk about your upgrade problem.
I don't have an upgrade problem.
Two Audis, an Opel, a Kia, and a Hyundai. Five cars, Yaku. Denial.
I just love cars. I mean, we buy cars that make it so much easier for you and convenient to sell your car. You want to try it?
Okay, just once. Turn off the cameras. I see how this is addictive.
Take two of those.
We buy cars. The easiest way to sell your car by far.
Sure. It's a heck of a story. And you mentioned the Western Cape. Has it spread that far in the past?
No. The largest part of our country has been foot and mouth free for many, many decades. And it's different from safety and security or potholes where farmers would usually make a plan and just do something for themselves. Because this is a state-controlled disease. By law, it is, we cannot bring in measures to manage it, the state has to do it.
So it's state failure. That's what we're seeing here.
Yeah. And we do not have the command and control anymore. There's a helicopter that is getting airborne close to me. So if it comes over our heads, I will just try to sit it out for a second or two.
But how does it get from the Kruger Park, where, as you've explained, it is endemic, all the way to the Western Cape? Are there no barriers now between where this disease exists and where it the rest of the country?
You know, Alec, it did not leapfrog there. It crawled there. And it's not only the Kruger Park. It's also the whole border of Zimbabwe. It's the whole border of Mozambique, where, of course, they do not have the same control measures. The Namibians do, our colleagues in Botswana, they are even allowed to export their meat and their livestock into the European Union because they have proper control measures. They are very, very strict. You don't dare in those two countries to move cattle from an affected zone to a nearby district. It is because we do not have that command and control systems that we are in trouble. So this time it originally broke out in a district in KZN, the northernmost district, on the other side of Pongola. And then it spread into the Mpumalanga Lowveld and then into the Mpumalanga Highveld and from there to Northwest Province and the Free State. And now it is in nearly all the provinces. I think the Northern Cape still managed to hold the integrity.
So if you are a farmer who is trying to protect your herd, how do you do that given this highly contagious disease that seems to be spreading like wildfire?
The holiday season is coming up and many of our viewers will probably travel across South Africa and you might notice that at farm gates, farmers would put white lines in front of the gates. It's a kind of a powder. So when a vehicle crosses over it, it sanitizes it. You wash out every truck that had livestock on it. You try to isolate yourself and sanitize your farm as much as you can. You try to keep any contact with other farms or feedlots or auction floors to the bare minimum. And farmers are very nervous at this stage because any kind of contact, whether it is nose to nose or whether it is drinking from the same water source, any contact. But it is not only physical contact. We've seen that it can actually also spread through small drops of moisture that is windborne.
We'll just let the helicopter go and do its thing.
Okay. Yes, the Alouette.
Is it the old Alouette? Yeah, Alouette. Sure. Didn't know they were still around. Okay. sounds like it's done. So Theo, how bad though is foot and mouth disease? For instance, if an animal, if a cow or a cat, if cattle have foot and mouth disease, it mean that the meat cannot be consumed by humans?
It is not that simple. It can still, but the procedures and the all the regulations attached to it, especially in those areas where we have high concentration of cattle, such as in a feedlot. You know, one of our feedlots usually have 140,000 cattle at any moment. And when foot and mouth hit there, it is just impossible to isolate each individual from all the others. We vaccinate and those cattle would heal again. And we would put a brand on it, an F, to say that it has been vaccinated. But once it's been vaccinated, there's only one market for it, and that is the abattoir. And remember, our industry is not built on meat only. It really starts with breeding. It starts with our stud animals. People would not pay 2 million rand for a piece of meat. It is because of the genetics that farmers would pay these high prices. And the search for excellence in the meat industry is all about genetics. To have the most perfect animal possible to breed with. And the devastation is amongst the stud farmers. But it also impacts heavily on dairy and on the smallholder farmers. It is at the core of our problem at this stage is the communal areas where we do not really have traceability, where animals are not marked, where you don't know exactly who the owner of this is, and where it is hard to spread the message on how to manage it.
So if I understand correctly, if a animal gets foot and mouth disease, the only way to stop it is either to vaccinate it or to shoot it. Is that your option?
Yeah, the animal must be slaughtered or it must be vaccinated. Now, interesting enough, remember, foot and mouth is endemic all over southern and East Africa, especially in the zones where it is managed by zoning. But we had a similar situation in Latin America, where they have many more cattle than we have. To give you an idea, we have about 14 million head of cattle in South Africa. In Brasilia, they have 800 million cattle. And when foot and mouth hit Latin America, Paraguay, Uruguay, Argentina, they developed an oil-based vaccine, and they decided to wipe this disease off the continent, and they vaccinated everything. There is a strong push in South Africa that we should do the same, that we should just wipe it clean and then start over, because many farmers have lost the faith in the state to be able to manage this. And they say that the livestock industry will remain in the freezer box if we do not do something as drastic as that.
Are the reports that we've run out of vaccines in South Africa accurate?
This is the sensitive question, Alec. You know, the vaccines are being manufactured in Pretoria. When it comes to foot and mouth, it is the Agricultural Research Council and not Onderstepoort Biological Products. There was a time when it was the leading institution when it comes to animal health care, and especially the manufacturing of vaccines. But then gradually it ran out of capacity. And some 12, 13 years ago, the state decided to recapacitate it, and R500 million was budgeted for it. Now, we don't know up to this day what happened to that 500 million rand. When Minister John Steenhuisen took over, he dusted off those files and he vouched to get to the bottom of it. But we haven't had a progress report for quite a while. But then, in the meantime, this disaster has hit us. And now we import the vaccines from Botswana. It's an old vaccine. If I remember well, it was already developed in the early 1970s. And you've seen through COVID how often a virus can mutate. So you need modern vaccines that will beat up the latest mutations. But it's not only that. The very idea that Botswana can supply themselves and us while we cannot is really a major cause for concern. But also, Botswana does not have unlimited capacity. There's no way we can put an umbrella across the whole country with the vaccines we buy from Botswana. And as it is, the rumors are rife that we will not have enough vaccines again until March next year, because they need to beef up their capacity, and for that they need to scale down for a few months. And then, of course, we buy it from them. And farmers have a lot of questions about this transaction. Do we buy it direct from them, state to state? Or are there middlemen involved? Because at one stage, the cost of a single shot was 120, 126 rand. Then it dropped to about 80 rand when we started asking the questions. We know that our colleagues in Brazil and Argentina, who have the new vaccine, a much better vaccine than we have, we know that they buy it for the equivalent of 42 rand. We want to know, is there a tenderpreneur in between? As it is, the farmers are financially suffering because of it. We don't need anyone to load the price as a middleman. If ever there was a priority now for agriculture in this country, it would be to get our production capacity up and running again, to get to the latest biological technologies, and to make sure that the vaccines can be where we need it as soon as possible. At the moment, they say that we can manufacture about 20,000 shots in a month. But that is not enough. It would not only cover 20% or 15% of one of our big feedlots.
What about the exports? Because this will get government's attention. I've noticed I spent this week in lockup at budget ahead of the MTBPS, and there suddenly we're seeing a focus on, for instance, the Transnet rail lines, because there's a realization that if we don't get those rail lines sorted, then we can't export the iron ore to the international community, which means government can't make taxes and we can't get the foreign exchange. When foreign exchange comes onto the table, because South Africa needs that to those exports to pay for its imports, then we get government's attention. Is there any issue here where there's a foreign exchange loss, i.e. that our trading partners are saying, we don't want your beef anymore because it's contaminated?
Yeah, we are not a net exporter of beef. We are actually a net importer. We consume more than what we produce. And no one with a serious cattle industry would import from a country where you have foot and mouth outbreaks that is not completely under control. We talk to those countries who do not have a cattle industry, such as the Middle Eastern countries, the Emirates, Saudi. They will probably be the first to allow our beef in there again. We have seen vast areas of the country being cleared from cattle farming because of foot and mouth. Like, for example, in the Letaba district, it used to be a focal point of cattle farming. But because of foot and mouth, very soon it could no longer compete with the wildlife ranching industry. And wildlife ranching is not as vulnerable to this as the cattle industry would be. But if we've had an export opportunity for our beef, if we could break through to ship out our beef, you will see this industry expand along with all the co-benefits, such as job creation and training, like few other industries can. But then we will have to prove to the world that we have proper handles on disease management.
What about the Minister of Agriculture? He's so far got quite a lot of plaudits. We've spoken to people in organized agriculture like yourself who've said, no, Steenhuisen's doing a good job, doesn't seem to be doing a good job here.
You see, there's not that much the minister can do but to create the frameworks in which all the players can work together. And remember, there are many different interests in this value chain. The interests of the farmers are not the same as the interests of the massive feedlots. And the interests of the exporters are not the same as those of the farmers. And of course, now I'm talking with my selfish hat on as a representative of family farmers. My constituency are the smaller and medium-scale family farming units. They are the ones who are suffering the most. So we are banging on the minister's door all the time to say, this is really not rocket science. What we need is traceability, strict traceability. And traceability is just like it works with humans. It is vested on two pillars. We have a document, whether it be an ID or a passport. And in the case of cattle, they would have an ear tag that confirms identity. But along with that, like we have a fingerprint, they also have a nose print. And with the two of those, it's very hard to cheat the system. We want a traceability system based on these two pillars. And then if there is no ID, we must assume that this animal does not belong to anyone. And the state must act on those just like it would be with illegal foreigners or humans. Once there is identification, you can trace the animals properly. It will also hit a dent in our massive problem with livestock theft. Livestock is being stolen every year to the value of billions of rands. Some farmers every year lose their farms because of livestock theft, because the traceability and the identification is not there. And then the minister has his department, which is not singing to the same tune as private sector, for example, when it comes to veterinarians. We have much bigger capacity amongst private veterinarians who knows every farmer, every farm, every district than what we have within the Department of Agriculture. But because this is a state-controlled disease, the private veterinarians cannot just take control of it. They need to be allowed to get involved, to do vaccinations, to set up structures and get involved in the structures to control the movement of animals and so. And there is for certain an animosity within the department against the involvement of the citizenry and especially the private sector. We have seen that. We have developed an artificial intelligence platform where we harvest data at the back end of it. And we saw that there was a problem with foot and mouth in northern KZN this time last year, when more than 60 inquiries were registered about foot and mouth. So we immediately made an appointment with a senior official in the department, and we said, it seems that there is a foot and mouth outbreak. And his response was, yes, there is. We know about it. But we're not going to declare this in the affected zone yet. We are not going to release a budget for vaccinations yet, because the private sector and the minister is discussing this without involving us at the moment. Now, that zone was declared only, if I remember well, around the 17th of April, 6 months later. It should have been done already in 2024. And by that time, there was no stopping of it anymore. From there on, farmers started calling us, saying, we see the traffic of one or two head of cattle on a trailer behind a bucky every evening, taking them to those auction floors which were still open in the Highveld. And this is how it started spreading. Now, the senior officials say they can no longer just summon the defense force, the police, municipal traffic officials to close roads. But if they can't, who can? You know, this is a state-controlled disease. The state must take control. And that is not happening with the strictness that it should.
So, Theo, why should consumers, those of us who eat meat, who live in cities, why should we be concerned by all of this? How is it going to affect us?
There will be less beef on the shelves and shops, which means the prices would be higher. It's already so. You have seen the cost of a Saturday afternoon braai, that shot up now. It is all about what is available, the volumes which are available, the supply side. The demand side is still the same. The supply side is down. Prices are up. And we've not turned it around yet.
And is it only beef or other meat as well?
No. It is all ruminants are affected. In Namibia, even some hunting and antelope, but not yet in South Africa. It also impacts on sheep farmers. Although we have not picked up the disease in sheep in a way that would impact, but it's just that there's no movement of animals now. And, you know, it impacts on profitability, on the existence of farmers, the viability of farms. And for that reason, it impacts on jobs available, not only on farms. Remember, for every job on a farm, we sustain about 17 jobs elsewhere in the value chain.
So if I understand correctly, when animals get foot and mouth disease, the farmers are then forced to slaughter them or to vaccinate them. And that means you have a glut of meat, presumably, on the market until such time as that glut is over. And then there's a much smaller stock, which means prices would probably then go through the roof. But in the short term, it would be a benefit. There would be lower costs. Is that the way the chain works?
No, it's not as simple as that. When there's this outbreak, there are fewer feedlots and abattoirs to buy your cattle. For the farmer, the market is shrinking now. You are lucky if you can sell it to somebody who will slaughter it now. That's why there's an immediate cash flow crisis for the farmer. On the other side of the farm gate, the damage to the business of the abattoir or the feedlot is immense too, even the auction houses. And they are in a struggle for survival. So the last thing they can do is just to buy in more cattle, which might bring the disease into their business.
So the auctioneers,
so
I can understand.
As if we are flooded with too much meat now.
I guess one can easily understand the auctioneers. But as far as the abattoirs are concerned, can they take animals that have foot and mouth and sell that into the supply chain?
Yeah, but they would rather not, hey. They would try to avoid that. The animal needs to be vaccinated. It needs to be branded. There's an F on it. And then they would wait for it to have healed. And once the animal has been confirmed that it is healthy again, then they would slaughter it. No one, moves a sick animal. No one buys a sick animal.
But if you're in the informal market, if you're in the those tribal lands, surely those rules would be a little more lax?
That is the problem. That is the problem. And how that animal gets slaughtered and the meat and the offal gets moved to a new district and it contaminates that district too. And those animals are not kept within fences. They walk down the road and or they are being loaded onto a trailer and taken somewhere else and then the disease spreads.
So I guess what we need to understand is that the critical thing here is do not allow foot and mouth disease to spread throughout the country, and certainly not in the way that it's happened in South Africa. But if you've had no progress on the identification regulations, and you're not just talking about it for the first time now. From what I understand, it's been around for a long time. It's been on the priority list for decades, and nothing much is done about it. So my real question, as we close here, is if you could sit down today with the president and the minister of agriculture, what one thing would you say needs to be done to address this crisis?
There's no one thing that will address it, Alec. At least three things. Back to basics: traceability, animal identification at all costs. We need every animal to be identified so that we can control the movement. Secondly, we need a strategy, and that strategy needs to be built on the ability to isolate the districts which are affected. No movement from those districts. And then the involvement of all the stakeholders. Only 2 weeks ago, we had a wonderful breakthrough when RMIS, the Red Meat Industry Services, had a function where it announced a new traceability system, but more based on the document side, not on the biometrics. But not all stakeholders were even invited. The message definitely did not get to all the corners of the country and to all cattle farmers. One would have loved to see more inclusive participation and involvement. And I don't know whether it's about farmer politics or whether it is about capacity in the department, but it is the inclusivity of those meetings where strategy is discussed has been lacking for a very long time.
Dr. Theo de Jager is with SAI, and I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.